All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense for this Thursday. Another beautiful day on Lake Wissota where we only got a little bit of snow, not nearly as much as we feared we might get. It turns out that storm system stayed off to the west, and the South Twin Cities Metro got pummeled with a foot of snow. Fine, better than us. Yeah, we'll just be happy with the inch or so that we got here, because we know we got a ways to go yet for wintertime. On this January 5th, coming up this morning, we will talk to our political analyst friend Joe Zepecki about Governor Evers being sworn in for a second term, the themes in his inaugural address, and claims by Republican legislators that Evers was divisive and political in talking about issues that have, you know, wide bipartisan public support. In our next hour, we're going to talk to Jessica Scharfenberg about the things that you should know about so-called crisis pregnancy centers and how they are not the same as going to a medical clinic with the trained professionals who can give a pregnant woman and her partner all of the information that they need to have a healthy pregnancy. That will be done along with Dr. Kristen Lyerly, who will then stick around at 7:30 and do this week's Hometown Health segment with Dr. Joel Charles, a family practice physician, who lets us know that a changing climate isn't just some political matter. It is very much, first and foremost, a health issue, a public health issue. He explains how that is and how he came to be involved in being among the many medical professionals advocating for more to be done about mitigating the impact of a changing climate. Luke Mathers will join us to talk all about civic media matters coming up later in the show. I've decided that, you know, Aaron Zommers is our producer in Madison here. And Aaron, I've decided that I think we might need a new name for the show, because at the end of the show, we're always trying to promote the other civic media radio stations, radio products. We have people on from the different stations and shows. And not everybody hears every show except this one in the 6 a.m. hour, and then you've got Devil's Advocates later in the day. But throughout the rest of the day, there you might hear different shows here and there. Doesn't that strike you like we're like homeroom when you went to school? We're that place everybody gathers first thing in the morning before you go on to your other classes and in other rooms. I feel like we have a homeroom vibe to us here.
I think you might be right about that. We might have to use that Charlie Brown anniversary soundtrack history lesson, I think it's called.
That's right.
That for our theme, yeah. Now.
Maybe so. And then occasionally, if we just talk like the teachers on Charlie Brown and go, wah, 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 if we could get Luke to do that when talking about the shows, that would be tremendous. So we have him coming up a little bit later on. Let's see. What else are we going to talk about today? There's still no Speaker of the House in the United States House of Representatives. And nothing really changed in ballots 4, 5, and 6 that were held yesterday. It just is embarrassing. President Biden called it embarrassing. Fellow Republicans called it embarrassing. Mike Gallagher, the congressman from Green Bay, gave a speech on behalf of Mike McCarthy, who hasn't gained any new support from his fellow Republicans, leading some people to joke about, you know, whether a congressman from Green Bay would be wise putting so much faith in somebody named McCarthy. But, you know, you fill in the jokes yourself. Lauren Windsor commented, the political journalist, that the House Republicans from the state of Georgia, while they're still waiting to vote on who the speaker will be, they shouldn't be given food or water while they're waiting to vote, right? Because after all, they would deny the same to voters down in Georgia who have to wait in line to cast a ballot. Let's see. Somebody else noted, it's funny that Republicans are finally able to rerun an election over and over again, and yet they still can't win it. And in a bit more of a insightful media note comes this post. If the squad of 4 Democratic members 2 years ago, if the squad blocked Nancy Pelosi from being elected speaker on 6 consecutive ballots, Trust me, the New York Times would already have a front page, quote unquote, news analysis piece asking whether the Democratic Party can continue to exist in the United States. And the person who wrote that isn't wrong. Again, given the changing standards, double standards that we have in national media, here we're talking about, oh, just a few people, you know, breakaway members, people that are trying to call themselves rebels. Let's not go that far by any sense. They are a far right splinter group, but it is in fact tarnishing the entire Republican brand. And I'll have more to say about that in our next segment. Governor Evers has met with the mayors of the five largest cities in the state to talk about, you know, their needs coming up in the next state budget. It's nice to see that kind of back and forth of a state official talking to local government leaders. You certainly don't have that amount of respect from Republican legislators. And let's see, we've got a Milwaukee Bucks update. They had been ahead. They fell behind. It went to overtime. Giannis had 30 points, 10 assists, and 21 rebounds for his second triple-double of the season. Grayson Allen hit a tie-breaking three-pointer with 11 seconds to go in overtime, allowing the Bucks to beat the Toronto Raptors 104-101 on Wednesday night. They will next play tomorrow, Friday, at home versus the Charlotte Hornets. All right, let's take a little break. I'm going to go fill my coffee cup, and then we're going to talk about that phrase, nobody wants to work, and how it just seems to apply to Republican politicians. That's next on Up North News Radio. Update on House Republicans trying to elect a speaker in just a moment. First, a reminder that over at upnorthnewswi.com, you see the work that our reporters are doing, including a new piece from Christina Lurie on why you should care about the upcoming Wisconsin Supreme Court election, you know, the issues that are at play and why it's important for you to vote in both February in the primary and April in the general election. We also have from our National Courier Newsroom correspondent, Kia Vakil, an update on Republicans and their failure to elect a speaker, what that means and why it matters. And we will talk to Kia Vakil tomorrow morning at 6:30 about this week's political headlines, including that vote for speaker. That is all coming up tomorrow. Also, a reminder that you can watch our program through Up North News on the Facebook page or the Facebook page of Bull Falls Radio in Wausau. And if you ever miss a show, just go to our show page at civicmedia.us. Learn more about where all the civic media stations are around Wisconsin. We're still adding them. The network is still growing. And we'd love to have you follow along live on the radio or through a podcast or through online. Whatever works best for you. I'm working on an editorial for Up North News. And I just wanted to make note for folks that the inability of Republicans in Congress to agree on a speaker needs to be understood in its proper and modern context. This is nothing new about today's GOP politicians. They're not interested in doing the actual work of governing. And you can tell that by looking at the record. After all, this is the party of government shutdowns, expensive government shutdowns that leave workers and contractors unpaid for a time. Remember that it was 4 years ago that it took 35 days before Trump and the Republicans ended a shutdown that had cost taxpayers $5 billion. And it was all about paying for a wall with Mexico that never got built, and the demands Trump made at the last minute before the government shutdown, he never got them. It was all for nothing. A year earlier, the government had to shut down for 3 days. And 10 years ago, you might recall that there was a 16-day government shutdown in 2013. An estimated 800,000 workers were furloughed during that time. And that one cost taxpayers $2 billion. But government shutdowns don't matter to Republicans in Congress. Then you come to the state level. Republican legislators stayed home for 9 months in 2020 as the coronavirus swept through the population and the economy went into free fall, and they went home and did nothing. And then last year, they did it again, gave themselves a nearly 10-month paid vacation from legislating. And Wisconsin Republicans never feel pressure to avoid a government shutdown of state government because you can't. The lack of a new state budget simply means that state business carries on under the levels of the old budget. So there is no pressure on Wisconsin Republicans to ever improve upon state budget resources. The fact is that far too many Republicans are so hell-bent on claiming government doesn't work that they relish the opportunity to, quote-unquote, prove it by being the reason that it shuts down or hobbles along.
I do have one question about that. How is it legal for legislators to give themselves a 9 to 10 month paid vacation during the year? Like, aren't they elected to a position to do a job?
Absolutely. They are. It's classified as a full-time position. Wisconsin is one of the few states that still has a full-time legislature, meaning they can come into session anytime they want. There's not a fixed period between, say, January and April, and then they go home after that, and they're, you know, paid less as a result. Instead, Wisconsin legislators get a full-time salary of $50,000 a year and have the ability to therefore be in session whenever they want or not be in session. They can end a session and they can stay home the rest of the year. They can do a little bit of constituent services, a little politicking, and they're going to get paid the same. And by the way, these are the same people that live to bash teachers. And you always know one of the first criticisms is, you know, getting paid for a full year, you know, for 9 months of work and getting 3 months off. You ever notice you don't hear that so much anymore now that they're the ones taking 9 and 10 month paid vacations? Ironically, these are the same Republicans who give us that meme-worthy quotation, "Nobody wants to work." And if you ever see it in print, it's kind of spelled in a ridiculous manner with a bunch of capital and small letters scattered throughout. Done in a ridiculous manner because it is a ridiculous statement. Unemployment is at a modern day low in this state, in this country. The pandemic aid and the unemployment insurance that conservatives criticized so harshly did not create a dependency on government any more than a life preserver creates a dependency on nearly drowning. So the Republicans in the U.S. House who are blocking Kevin McCarthy from becoming speaker, they have no incentive to allow the new session of Congress to actually begin governing because at its base, they are against governing. Keep in mind that if and when they are finally allowed to wield power, their agenda will have nothing to do with inflation or crime, the messages they ran on in the last election. Instead, they will begin investigations that more closely resemble dog and pony shows. They will try to gut the Congressional Ethics Office. They will attempt impeachments. They will coddle the insurrectionists, given that some of those insurrectionists are now members of that caucus. And they will facilitate any attempts to rig future elections. They're not out to do anything for the American people. They will try to undo things like Social Security and Medicare and reproductive health rights and voting rights and taxes for their wealthiest donors, all the while using the threat of a government shutdown to achieve this kind of budgetary blackmail. So the idea of not governing, the idea of not even really working, for that matter, isn't a bug, but a feature of the right wing's political DNA in this day and age. The best way for them to claim that government doesn't work is for them to not do any work and prevent anyone else from getting things done. Further proof of this disconnect can be seen from the Assembly Speaker, Robin Voss, who in his opening remarks before the new legislative session took a second to make special mention of how he's tired of getting blasted for wanting a flat tax that would overtly benefit the super wealthy. And as you listen to his defense of that, please note as well the places where he says Wisconsin is losing retirees and what he thinks the reason is versus the real reason that I'll tell you about on the backside of this quote from Robin Voss.
Turned Democrat state. Having a discussion about our tax burden can help with our demographic challenges. And just to be clear, it's not about rewarding the wealthy, even though there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. It's about saying that if you're a retired couple and they decide where they're going to spend 6 months in a day, it should be Wisconsin, not Florida or Texas or Arizona or Tennessee, all places that have a significantly lower tax burden than Wisconsin.
What else do they have? What else do they have? Aaron, pop quiz. What do those states have that Wisconsin doesn't have?
A couple more degrees in the thermometer.
Yes. Let's all chip in and buy Robin Voss a thermometer. Does he have a condition in his retinas that prevents him from seeing snow or feeling a wind chill? Is there a dermatological problem with his skin where he can't feel the cold? To say that retirees are picking Florida, Texas, Arizona for tax policy?
I've never heard that.
It's ridiculous. Now, look, once somebody moves there and they see the difference in taxes, especially if, you know, if they have a very large nest egg or a large income still coming in, again, for those folks who are wealthy enough to even care about tax policy, yeah, they want the break. But please don't try to tell us that it's tax policy that leads to that decision in the first place, that, oh, if only we would get rid of taxes for the very wealthy, more people would choose to retire in Wisconsin. Look, I'm not trashing anybody that wants to stay in Wisconsin. I'm going to stay in Wisconsin. I have no desire to live in those other states. I'll go visit, but there are lots of people who are happy to retire right here. And here's the other thing. They're happy with the level of services that we have. No, they don't go to school. Their kids don't go to school. Maybe even their grandkids don't go to school anymore. Maybe the grandkids are grown and gone. But they still value the local public neighborhood schools that we have here and want them to be properly funded, along with the roads and everything else. And so Robin Voss's attempt to apologize for putting the wealthiest taxpayers first, it failed to land. You know, it was a clunker. We know better than that. And Robin Voss now has 6.6 billion reasons to want to work toward a win-win. He's going to get a tax cut. He's going to get a tax cut that frankly does lean rather heavily on supporting the very wealthy because of math. It's going to happen that way, but it's not going to happen that way until he works with Governor Tony Evers for a tax cut that also greatly benefits the middle class, the working poor, other folks, and you know, including retirees. And there's no reason why we can't have something that well-rounded that cuts taxes at all levels, but also improves upon our investments in schools and local governments and protecting our resources and healthcare and you name it. There's no reason why, unless, of course, like their brethren in the U.S. House, they simply don't have an interest in governing. And if that's the case, if they're all about, you know, the gridlock, if they're all about pointing fingers, if they're all about blame, then yeah, this is the path that they choose. These are the people that gave us you know, Fred Prehn and the people that are, you know, holdovers on the Technical College System Board. And, you know, these are the people that won't appoint Governor Evers nominees after 4 years, because they're showing you they don't actually stand for anything. They don't stand for governing. They stand for power for the sake of power. And we're going to talk more about that right after this break with political analyst Joe Zepecki about Governor Evers' second inaugural and the unending fight by Republicans to try to elect a Speaker of the House. We will have all that and more. And then Kristen Lierley and Hometown Health in our next hour here on Up North News Radio. Back on Up North News now with Joe Zepecki joining us after a celebratory week, shall we say, for folks who are supporters of Governor Evers. So bright-eyed and bushy-tailed describes neither one of us, but we'll prattle on as best we can. Joe, how are you? Happy New Year.
I'm good. Happy New Year to you and to your listeners. It certainly was a fun way to start the new year at the inaugural events earlier this week. It was a good time, and maybe too good of a time,
perhaps. But I recall them well, and they are times that, you know, it's not just a party. It is a time of optimism when people are standing in, you know, that beautiful marble building and thinking about the possibilities. And look, we know a lot of it, you know, is probably unwarranted given the times that we live in. But, you know, I think you and I would both be honest about it. Inauguration days and start of session days, you do get an extra dose of imagine how good things could be, you know, in another time and place where people cooperated a bit more, shall we say.
Yeah, it is a remarkable thing to witness, the swearing in, taking the oaths of office of the state's constitutional officers, all of the pomp and circumstance. You know, there's a reason for all of it. And part of it is to sort of put in perspective that we are fortunate to live in a place where we, the people, are sovereign and get to decide who represents us and who leads us. And it really is a day where there's amazement and wonder and optimism. And we certainly saw that in the speeches. We certainly saw that reflected in the folks who are partying and dancing and having a good time. And really, the other thing that really jumped out to me was it's a day that's a lot about politics, but doesn't really seem super political. It's more about state pride. And you know, you got the University of Wisconsin marching band, and you've got people from all across the state and different cultures represented, you know, old and young. It's just, it was a really cool celebration of the great state of Wisconsin, in addition to being a really rewarding capstone to those of us who worked really hard to try and win as many of those elections last year as possible.
Yeah, I mean, you've got the school kids there. And again, you know, you and I both know on those days where those fourth grade field trips are coming through, you actually kind of puff up your chest a little bit more and go, hey, I get to work here. And people look at this as the seat of government. And that's pretty awesome. It's actually the building itself, Joe, that sometimes I think we all take for granted. I can't tell you how many times I have looked at that building when coming down to Madison and thinking, if we were starting a state today, would we build anything like that? It just reminds you that we once lived in a country, well, we didn't live in it, but other people lived in a country where they marked their state capital by building these magnificent buildings in Madison, in St. Paul, and, you know, in so many others. I think there's only like one building where the state capitol kind of looks like, you know, your typical office building. And yeah, it's because it's supposed to be special, the seat of government.
Yeah, the Iowa State House is another one that is absolutely stunning. It's really cool. If you haven't been down to Madison in a while, get on through there. No COVID restrictions. The building is open. It's a great way to spend a day, and it never kind of ceases to stop you in your tracks.
Exactly. And so back to the inauguration itself, and of course, Governor Evers elected to a second term. Not a lot of surprises in what he said. And look, I wasn't expecting that Republican leadership was going to say, oh my gosh, we've seen the light. We'll give you everything you want. But, you know, to still Robin Voss and Devin Lemieux did, you know, to refer to the speech as divisive, when you consider where public opinion is, not just in the election, but on the issues that Governor Evers chooses as priorities. I just don't know that divisive. I mean, maybe they think it's a word that works for them. Maybe it's the best word that works for them, but I don't know that it's the correct word.
I think the bit is getting pretty worn out at this time. And, you know, when we talk about, listen, Governor Evers, in his speech, essentially mocked the Republicans who are standing in his way on these issues that have 60, 70, 80% approval from the people of Wisconsin, whether that's expanding Medicaid to provide more health care to folks and to save the state money, whether that's raising the minimum wage or protecting a woman's right to make her own health care choices or legalizing marijuana in any sense, whether that's medicinal or recreational. But he did it in the most Tony Evers polite, golly gee, aw shucks way possible, and cited the Marquette Law School poll and just sort of said, listen, I don't expect people to agree with me all the time. That's not what this is supposed to be about. But I'm really glad that a lot of people agree with me 60, 70, 80% of the time, according to the latest Marquette poll. And so Republicans tried to no avail for 4 years to paint Tony Evers as something he is not, which is, you know, a radical, you know, far out there Democrat. And he's just not. And so I think it's more sort of revealing that they don't know what else to do than go back to the same playbook on the first day of his second term when it didn't get him what they wanted last time, because what they wanted was to defeat Tony Evers and they didn't get that done. And I know we'll get to this, but it sort of goes to show that the chaos in the Republican Party and the lack of direction is not just limited to what we're seeing at the federal level in the U.S. House of Representatives this week. The rot goes all the way down to these state legislatures where Republican parties, they may have big majorities, but they're sort of at sea. They don't know which way is up and where they're heading. They don't have a direction, so they just sort of resort to calling people the same names they always have. I don't think it's going to go very well for him, but we'll find out.
Well, we'll see. We'll get to that chaos in the House in a bit here. But sticking with the fact that Evers is entering a new term, it was interesting to note that Fred Prehn, the squatter on the Natural Resources Board, finally, you know, gave it up. And three different squatters on the Technical College System Board gave up the positions that they've held on to 20 months past the expiration of their term, thanks to a state Supreme Court that you know, said it's okay to go against democracy, essentially. But be that as it may, my question for you is that a good sign about what happens to the more than 100 nominations that Devin LeMahieu and the Republicans in the Wisconsin State Senate are still sitting on? Or is this just a few Scott Walker appointees who have decided to you know, accept reality and move on, and we actually won't see progress with the nominations in the state Senate?
I think it's possible to hold two thoughts in your head at the same time, and that's kind of what we have to do here. And the first thought is that it is very good that these appointees who overstayed their welcome and were no longer representing the will of the people as expressed by an appointment through a duly elected chief executive have finally given up the jig and have, you know, taken their papers and gone home. That's good. It means that democracy is a little bit stronger today than it was yesterday when these folks were staying past their welcome. The second thought is, I'm still not sure we should have a lot of optimism that the Republican-controlled legislature is all of a sudden going to find religion and be like, oh, of course, we'll consider and vote up or down on all of Governor Evers' appointments. This is a legislature, and we just talked about how they don't have much of a direction. So, you know, they've got some new policy ideas that we can talk about that are pretty out there. But I have a hard time believing that if for the last 4 years they were dragging their feet on nominations and giving people even an up or down vote, just letting them hang there, I'm not sure that they're going to rush to fill these. And that's too bad, because the role of the legislature on a lot of these appointments is to advise and consent and confirm. And we learned all of this in grade school. It's your job, folks. And so let's hope that Republicans will move more quickly on nominations. But I don't see any real reasons for optimism.
No, it is very much in line with the editorial that I gave earlier this morning that says, you know, not working and not governing is not a bug. It's a feature in the political DNA of right wingers who want to prove government doesn't work. And the only way they can do that is by not doing the work themselves. It's why I've often said those who hate government the most should be trusted the least to run it. And that sadly is where we are right now. But I always have to ask the question that at least has a little tinge of optimism to it is, as Governor Evers and Republicans talk about this next state budget and a record budget surplus of $6.5 billion, is there any way to game out a way that the two sides could reach a deal that doesn't happen very late in the session or even well into the summer? Is there any scenario, or would one or both sides just simply have to give up so much that there's virtually no hope for a timely budget resolution?
I mean, define timely, right? The thing is supposed to be done by June 30th. It's slipped a little bit in past years. You know, once during the Walker era, it certainly lasted until, what, like September or October. So it's not unheard of. Listen, I think the enormity of the state surplus under Governor Evers' leadership, I think we're talking about, you know, $6 billion. Am I right on that, Pat? Is that number?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
Just the sheer enormity of the number means that there's going to be urgency. There's going to be enough kind of wiggle room in the budget to give enough folks wins and what they want. You know, there's enough to do more money for schools that the governor wants. There's enough to do more for shared revenue and for municipalities that a lot of even these Republicans are hearing from their small town mayors and city administrators, like, hey, we're dying here. So I think the flexibility that the surplus provides means that there will be, you know, maybe not a grand bargain, maybe not by the stroke of midnight on June 30th, but I think this is about as good a shape as the state could hope to be in heading into a biennial budget cycle.
And let's wrap up moving into the halls of Congress, where as we record this, the sixth ballot is getting underway, voting for the speaker. The Democratic leader has won the first five votes in the new Republican-led House of Representatives. So I ask this as facetiously as possible, because you deserve these now and then as a Democratic operative, or if you're a Democratic member of the House. Was the first day with the three ballots that failed for Kevin McCarthy a great day, or the best day ever?
You know, I think it's a great day any day that people sort of have to take some accountability for their actions and their choices. And what is happening in Congress right now is Kevin McCarthy is finally facing the consequences of his own actions. So what a sight this has been to behold. You know, if there's a Guinness World Record for smirking as you are defeated and voted down time and time again, it's in danger of going to Kevin McCarthy. It's just madness. And this is what we have been warning about and talking about really since, you know, the moment Trump came down the escalator. The toxicity within the Republican Party is so pervasive that they can't even agree on how to organize the House. There's not a single member of Congress that has been sworn in to do their job because they can't do the brass tacks, bare, like, nuts and bolts of just getting the House organized because their conference is in disarray. What a bad look for Republicans that they can't get their stuff together.
No doubt about that. Joe Zepacki, thank you so much. Always good to have the visit. Have a great day.
You too.
We actually had time for another question with Joe that we removed out of editing because of time constraints. We're going to play that early in our next hour, because I also asked him about the January 6th committee releasing the transcripts of more of its closed-door interviews. And that included new information about the fake elector scheme, Wisconsin ties to it, what Ron Johnson knew about it, and what people said about Ron Johnson. And so you'll hear from Joe Zepacki about that in our next hour. But back to Governor Evers and his second inaugural. After that was done, he met yesterday with mayors of Wisconsin's five largest cities, Madison, Milwaukee, Green Bay, Racine, Kenosha, a closed-door meeting to talk about how the legislature could make some changes to how local governments are funded. And I think the most important thing to note is that state revenue sharing used to be 12.5% of the state's general budget. 12.5% went to local governments to support them. It's down to 5% now. And state Republicans need to start doing their fair share to support their constituents at the local level. This day in history and music next. You're up north. I feel like we almost need to start that again and have Kristen Lyerly's microphone open for these visits. Hey, Twinkle Toes, how are you? How are your dancing feet feeling?
Good morning. Oh my gosh, so good. We got to the point where we all just sat in the corner and took our shoes off. It was so much fun.
We are obviously talking about the inaugural ball, which Dr. Lyerly attended, and you recall filed a couple of reports for us from the scene. So you had a good time?
Yeah, it was great. The feeling in the air was just hope and positivity and connectedness. You know, I ran for assembly in 2020 and there were so many people there who I had met for the first time because when I ran, it was COVID and we never got to see each other in person. Lots of that interpersonal connection that just meant so much. I had an amazing time.
Oh, very nice. Okay. Well, that's great. And we're going to be busy with Kristen in our next hour with two different segments, one on crisis pregnancy centers and then our hometown health segment on a changing climate and it being a public health issue. So we have plenty of time for serious stuff later on. You just want to have some fun with music history today?
Desperately.
That was the Supremes. They recorded Stop in the Name of Love at the Motown Studios in Detroit on January 5th. Can you name the year?
1967.
1965. You were so close. 1965, that one was recorded on this day. Now we have a scientific one, as illustrated in part by Steely Dan in the background here. On this day in 1940, the FCC hears the first demonstration of FM radio. Although I think if that song had come through the speakers in 1940, the FCC folks might have freaked out. But it took a long time for FM to catch on. Mm-hmm. And again, this is somebody who had to sit through history of broadcasting classes and things of that nature. But it was, you know, people didn't really want to embrace the new technology. It was, you know, it was used for...
People were afraid of change?
Yeah, go figure. So it was relegated to like beautiful music stations. Did you even have those growing up?
Beautiful music stations or AM radios?
No, beautiful music stations. It was just all you know, symphonic, you know, background music type things. That's all FM was used for decades.
Yeah, not at my house, no. But I do remember the first oldies channel that came out and it was like mind-blowing. My mom was so excited.
Mm-hmm. The first time you ever really listened to FM and then in stereo and then the first time you put on stereo headphones, you know, and the music kind of moves from the left channel to the right channel. It's downright freaky. The advances that they've made in technology and, you know, some of it dates all the way back to 1940 when FM was first debuted. Let's see. Next, we've got a couple of birthdays here. As we listen to Blondie's Heart of Glass, the songwriter for that was Chris Stein, who turned 73 today. He is a co-founder of Blondie and a guitarist and songwriter.
Yeah. Come on.
Yeah, it's true.
Man, that's like the beginning of punk. Like they were so on the forefront of the New York music scene and what change makers Blondie was as a group.
Gotta love New Wave.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, yeah, very much so. Another birthday, Diane Keaton turned 77 today. the actress and director. Was on this day in 1933 that construction began in San Francisco on the Golden Gate Bridge. Here's a nice little economic piece of history. On this day in 1914, Ford Motor Company announced an 8-hour workday and a minimum daily wage of $5 plus bonuses. And again, that would not have happened without people organizing themselves and saying, we're not just going to do whatever, you know, bosses demand of us. We actually want a living wage. We want safe conditions. Who would have thought that fight's still going to go on, Kristen, 110 years later?
I hear you saying that unions matter, Pat.
Yes. Very, 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 very much so.
You just made Scott Walker's list.
He was on Scott Walker's list long ago, believe me.
Speaking of debuts of music change artists, how about this? It was on this day in 1973 that a guy named Bruce Springsteen released his debut album, Greetings from Asbury Park, New Jersey, with Blinded by the Light as one of the tracks. Now, this version was not successful as a single, but Manfred Mann's Earth Band covered it, topped the charts in 1977. And of course, by that time, many more people heard about the Boss and have just made him the superstar that he is these days.
He made himself the superstar that he is these days. I mean, he really earned it. This guy was, he came up through the trenches. He just loved music. He was sleeping under a bridge at a point. I mean, he was really heart and soul rock and roll.
Have you seen his one-man show, the Broadway show?
No, but I would love to. What a storyteller. I've seen him in concert, and I wasn't a fan when I went to go see him. I had friends who dragged me to the concert, and I left a giant fan. He's just an incredible entertainer.
I believe it. I caught the show on HBO, and there's no other way to put it. He's a real person. He's a real, hardworking, caring person. And what do I say all the time about my TV career? There were people coming through who wanted to be great TV journalists, and there were people coming through who just wanted to be on TV. And the same goes for so many other things, including music. And a guy like Bruce Springsteen wants to work it and get it done, and we've seen how it pays off. All right, this is where Aaron needs to come in, because Aaron always adds a little something that I would not have known about in the world of music. So, Aaron, tell us about the French composer and conductor who passed away on this day 7 years ago.
Well, I didn't pull up any music by him, unfortunately. And I might pronounce the name wrong because it's French. but Pierre Boulez passed away at the age of 90. I have heard a lot of his music when I was going to music school, because he was one of the most influential composers of Western classical music post-World Wars, and one of the most well-known conductors in his generation. So if you've heard of any other composers in that time period, you might know more, like, I don't know, Stravinsky or Schoenberg or things like that. He's definitely conducted a lot of famous performances of those.
I always learn something from Aaron. But just, it's...
Talk about a deep cut.
Very much so. And then finally, on this day in 1975, a show called The Wiz premiered at the Majestic Theater on Broadway, an adaptation of the wonderful Wizard of Oz with an all-black cast, including Stephanie Mills as Dorothy. In 1978, it was turned into a movie starring Diana Ross and Michael Jackson, which included this hit, Ease On Down the Yellow Brick Road.
I love how you bookended this with Diana Ross.
Of course, you know, hey, diva respects diva. What can I say? got to pay homage where you can. Why don't you stick around through the news break? We're going to talk a bit about, we're going to hear from Joe Zepecki one more time on the January 6th committee. And then we've got some health segments coming up as well. But we're glad your feet are rested. But they might be in a little tub as we speak right now with those bath salts, you know, below the desk. We can't tell.
Comfy slippers.
Yeah, there, that works too. So we'll be back after this. You're up north.